longer show is going to require more Viso. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Thank you for coming along. You can also email if you like. It's rick at rickemerson.com. A little Cosmopolis news here. Rick, says Matt. There's a story they're going to looking to close the Cosmopolis paper mill and convert it to ethanol production. The fuel of tomorrow from the city of tomorrow. Thought you'd like to know. Yet another email of superhero stuff ad.
Yeah, that just gets weirder every time I listen to it.
I know. I actually... Well, we'll bring it up later.
There are hidden meanings in that.
It's many, many layers of... many, many layers of meaning. Try to sort through all of these. Rick, I have a question for Sarah. Can you ask Sarah if she's seen the video from TMZ of Tara Reid trying to get into a club and the bouncer not allowing her?
Yep, it's on TMZ.
Have you seen this?
No, I think somebody sent it to me, though.
Let me describe it. Can you ask Sarah if she's seen the video from TMZ? It is of Tara Reid trying to get into a club. The bouncer will not allow her. He makes her stand with the crowd outside. No, it gets better.
This is just like the day of feeling bad for ex-celebrities. Go ahead.
Yes, let's all feel bad for Tara Reid and her uneven boobs.
Dick Clark openly weeping.
Duct taped to a podium. So terrible. Okay, but what is the best possible... Don't cheat by looking at your email. What is the best possible way that this ends? Tara Reid tries to get into a club in this video. The bouncer won't allow her. He makes her stand with the commoners outside. The icing on the cake? Sarah? What is the icing on the cake to this? Come on.
Paris Hilton goes in without...
Yes!
One. Really?
The icing on the cake, Paris Hilton walks up and they let her right in.
Oh. Thought God, I need a life. If I can guess that out of everything.
It's true. We really are a clearinghouse for these things. It's 503-733-2970. We'll get David here in a moment, but first let's welcome from the City of Angels, CNN radio correspondent, Jim Roop, who joins us now. I'm not in full voice. Jim Roop, hello. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm like a good 7.5 out of 10 today.
That's not bad.
No, it's okay.
You were an 8 of 10 on Friday.
Was I?
Monday, for gosh sakes.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? I had the voice that was going on Friday, and I'm still not back. The voice is not, voice is at 80%, but there's also like some allergy hay fever stuff going on today. So, I got kind of a nose deal going on today. What do you
got? You got that foggy head kind of thing happening?
No, that was last week. I feel better in terms of, like, my thought processes and all of that today. It's just, it's really more of a nasal congestion. And I got a big nose, too, so what are you going to do? Let's see, I've just been handed this breaking, everything is breaking news today. We were talking to Baumgarten earlier.
Yeah.
Boy, man, you want to talk about uncorking a classic, an instant classic Gary Baumgarten rant. Because I don't know if you've heard or not, but we just literally, as we were welcoming Gary Baumgarten to the show, they released that this John Mark Carr guy, obviously, is not the guy, isn't going to be charged.
Told you.
Yeah, I mean, it's to no one's ever. And of course, you know, by the end of the day, I would be astounded if by the 5 o'clock news tonight, there is not somebody who has tallied up the dollar figure that it cost to get to this point with this idiot. I mean, on the one hand, I guess they're going to send him back to California and they're going to put him in jail for child porn. Is that true?
I think those charges were dropped, if I'm not mistaken.
So did I, but...
Because that was part of the extradition deal.
That's what I thought, but maybe it was part of the extradition deal, but sort of dependent on him being charged, because Baumgarten seemed to be under the impression that they were going to ship him back your way and stick him in jail there. Maybe not. It may be a day or so before we know, but...
No, I'd just open the door and kick his butt out. Say, get to wherever you're going on your own.
Well, and the good news about that is you kick that guy out on the street, and that's a problem that'll kind of be taken care of in a day or two.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's sort of a thinning of the herd.
That's right.
Listen, I love to see that we're all on the same page.
That's right.
We've got this breaking news as well. Wait, where's my Tom Cruise cuts new movie deal. Do you have this?
With who?
This is from the LATimes.com, or LATimes.com. Tim Riley has just handed this to me. Tom Cruise has cut a deal with a group that includes the owner of the Washington Redskins to finance the overhead costs of his film production company. Redskins owner Daniel M. Snyder, chairman of Six Flags Incorporated, is said to be a leading investor in an agreement that would give Cruz... Jesus God, are you serious? Yeah. Less than $3 million a year.
What a deal.
To finance staff and office expenses. The two-year deal gives Cruz less than the $3 million a year that he reportedly turned down from Paramount Pictures to renew his long-time deal.
What an idiot.
God damn, that's got to hurt.
Maybe he gets a free pass to Magic Mountain.
Yeah, he gets an e-ticket, though, and some free cotton candy. The thing about celebrity is it's so bizarre because it warps your perspective. Because if you and I, Jim Roop, if somebody offered us a $3 million a year deal to do, I mean, literally, I would deep-sea dive through raw sewage for $3 million a year. I don't care.
Yep.
But Tom Cruise... $3 million a year it's gotta feel insulting to him. I mean, it's gotta
Lunch
be like,
money.
Yeah, somebody kicking him right there in the junk.
He'll have to buy generics.
You'll have to buy a generic ultrasound machine. duct tape to keep Katie at home. So there you go. So you heard
breaking news here also.
Well, what is it?
Barry Bonds' former trainer is ordered to return to prison for not testifying.
Bam!
And Barry Manilow. Let's see here. Just the postponed surgery on both hips so he can attend the Emmys yesterday. He's going under the knife today, apparently.
Barry Manilow, both hips. You know.
No, okay, Rick, ask him.
Okay.
Jim
Roop from CNN, you attended last night's Emmys.
Don't remind me.
All right. What? By the way, what is an Emmy? Well, I mean, really, what does that word mean?
It was a nickname for one of the early cameras in television.
Okay, there was a camera called an Emmy.
It was a bigger, longer name, something tube, Emmy, Emmistoclish, he's going to mark it.
And it's then like calling a potentiometer a pot.
Yeah,
something
totally.
Like that. And,
okay.
and they just started calling it an Emmy.
Okay, all right.
And then that's how that all grew.
Just before we talk about the Emmys, Scotty J, intern here, is asking, he's speculating, did Bonds pay this guy to go to the tank for him?
Oh, I don't know. I would imagine that Bonds promised him something.
All right. That's sort of.
Come on. Let's face it.
Ununderstood.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
That's what I figured. All right. Well, let's talk about the Emmys. So Sarah is morbidly fixated.
I am not. I feel bad for him. You were laughing.
I was not laughing at the actual event. I was laughing at the... Okay.
Did you see Dick Clark get wheeled off the stage?
We had the story where allegedly Dick Clark was affixed to a podium like he was strapped to it.
He was not strapped.
The story made it sound... I did not watch the Emmys. No one here did because we knew...
It may have been Velcro.
You were... we knew that you would be our eyes and ears, Jim Roop. And again, let me be very clear about this. I respect Dick Clark. He is an icon in my field and in many fields of broadcasting. It's very sad that he had the stroke and so forth.
He's still a teenager in the eyes of many.
It's just that teenager from Life Goes On. Mm-hmm. But the element that we have fixated on is when they apparently wheeled him off last night, like literally affixed to the podium. Is that true at all?
I didn't see it.
All right. The story we heard is that Barry Manilow went over.
Gave him a hug.
And Dick Clark, it was very teary-eyed. You know, it was a very touching moment. And then as they went to commercial break... That just the podium was wheeled off with Dick Clark and Barry Manilow both on it. They just had to, and it was just a very Simpsons Futurama-esque image of just Dick Clark sort of being duct taped to something.
Oh gosh!
Kind of like I figure they used to have to duct tape Jim Morrison to a microphone. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, I didn't see that part because there was somebody backstage talking to us at the time. I saw the tribute, and in between interviews, I kind of watched the screen, and then I heard Dick Clark's speech. And then that's all I was watching.
Boy, that Dick Clark...
Faded to black quickly.
Yeah, that fade to gray. That Dick Clark speech, is just, I mean, it's very hard to listen to because he's so obviously, you know, still affected by the stroke. And they said that he's recovering. And I think one can only
recover. He doesn't sound any different to me yesterday than he did the day he tried to host the Rockin' New Year's Eve a few years ago and got...
See?
Yeah.
That's why I said he's just not trying.
If he really wanted it, you're 76. I think you're only going to recover so much. But they had this cut, and I won't play it again. But this 30-second cut, and You just wonder who these guys who went up and they stuck a microphone in Dick Clark's face. And as I was noting, you figure that they would just toss him a softball yes or no question. Something he can answer in two words. You know, what is your favorite state? Something.
What did Chubby Checkers sing?
Yes, but instead they toss him this very awkward, open-ended question that takes him about 35 of the most excruciating seconds of your life to listen to, where it's just it's so awkward. And let's talk about awkward with this opening sketch of the plane crash. I mean, this is like less than a couple hours after that plane crash kills all those people in Kentucky, right?
Well, they knew about the plane crash 6 o'clock in the morning. They had plenty of time to readjust that opening bit. You know, I mean, if they started the bit with him coming out of the water, you still would have gotten the gist of it. I mean, somebody said if the plane went down in New York or L.A., they would have scrap that
absolutely,
you know, that altogether. It was weird when that thing started. When the bit started, it was no big deal, but when that plane started to shake, everybody backstage, we kind of look at each other, this nervous little giggle starts.
Yeah, because I mean, and again, it's not like I follow Kentucky news, but it was a big story that this plane crashed.
And not only that, but dig this, just before the Emmys aired in Kentucky, the local news station there, the NBC local affiliate, ran a news update. Well, guess what the update was? About the plane crash. And then from the plane crash update, right into that bit. Think about that. Think about if you're sitting in Lexington, Kentucky going, damn.
It's just astoundingly poor. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that poor taste comes out of Hollywood at this point, but what are you going to do?
It was very odd, and I don't know. But it's weird, too, because there's a lot of people that didn't connect. Backstage, nobody asked about that. Nobody connected the things. We just all kind of ignored it.
Well, what were the big moments at the Emmys last night from your point of view?
I thought Conan O'Brien was pretty funny.
He's a funny guy.
Yeah,
he really is.
He's pretty good.
He's unlike Billy Crystal, who's just very toothless, in my opinion, and you know Letterman, who I think is probably hip enough that he's a little too hip for those events. Conan O'Brien's a legitimately funny, very sharp but good-natured guy.
Now I don't know that Conan can pull off the Oscars.
No,
because they just wouldn't accept him because he's a TV guy.
Well, and he's so Midwestern.
True.
That's why Letterman never worked, because he's so Indiana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Conan O'Brien did really well last night with the Emmys.
And there was, any big surprises?
Big surprises.
Okay.
Yeah. Grey's Anatomy got skunked.
Well, which is a show that everybody loves. My wife loves that show.
Yeah, my wife likes it too. You know, she watches it. That and Medium and something else. I don't know what the hell she watches.
But it was great I was really surprised that 24 won for Best Drama Series. Not because it's not a quality show, because I don't watch it, but I know many people who do, whose opinion I respect. But it seems so, it almost seems too popular to win, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? It's a very action-packed,
odd is thrillers never win.
Right.
You know, and that's true with the Oscars, too. Thrillers, except for the French Connection, thrillers never win. And this is the same. You got to go back to, 1968 or something, that a thriller won an Emmy Award. You know? I mean, it's just nutty.
The great thing about last night was seeing Jeremy Piven, apparently. I was reading this morning, that Jeremy Piven, I watched this, and this is me this morning. I'm up at the house, CNN is on, but no offense, I have it muted. So CNN is on the background, sound turned off, and I saw Jeremy Piven on the screen, and in the back of my head, I'm like, I wonder what Jeremy Piven's in the news for, never putting the two together. But Jeremy Piven won Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy, which is fantastic, because I got to tell you, I've been a fan of that guy for a long time.
Yep.
He has had so many projects where he is sort of the C-level character. He's a tertiary character. He's had projects like that that television series Cupid that got canceled. That is a guy who has paid his dues.
But I got to tell you, though, I've talked to him on several occasions.
Is he an ass?
No.
Okay.
I'm telling you, this guy, and I was so happy for him last night because I know for a fact that he's one guy for sure that could give a crap. He never worked toward the trophy. The guy that I know, and I've talked to him several times, I don't think he ever considers getting to the trophy.
As much of a cliche as it is, it does seem like it's all about the work with that guy.
It really is. And the fact that he got one last night, that's why he was so broken up about it. I mean, he went with his mom, for gosh sakes, to this award show last night. And he's just you know, he's the kind of guy you want to go out and have a couple of pops with. You know, he's just a cool guy.
Now, he totally did the Vinny Chase. He took his mom to the Emmys because he knows the ladies like that.
Oh yeah, well the ladies totally dig that. Because was it Sarah? Was it you that said that you had heard that he was kind of an ass?
I know somebody who has met him a few times, and he was supposed to go pick him up for some event, and he was about 5 minutes late, and Jeremy decided, he's like, oh no, it's inconvenient for me now. I'm not going to go.
Yeah,
so he canceled the whole thing.
They're
temperamental. And be a real diva.
Well, I have a couple. Let's see. I have no idea what these sound cuts of him are. Let's see what they are, shall we? This is sort of a Russian roulette. I'll see what these Jeremy Piven sound clips might be here.
Interesting. What would he say? Well, he is here, and he's very proud.
Oh, that must be him talking about his dad.
Or
Dick Clark. There's the second one.
I think, the goodie bag should be sent to New Orleans and sent to Katrina victims.
Everybody applaud.
Hi.
Wouldn't that be great? Don't tax them. Just give it to them.
That seems like that's a little bit of a softball right there. New Orleans. All right.
Well, first of all, I think he meant take the money that you spent on those things and send it, because I don't think the people in New Orleans could use a spa day.
They don't need Nivea cream down.
Yeah,
oil of Olay.
They don't pair of butt-forming jeans. They don't need those, right? They need a freaking house.
All right, let me finish whatever this final cut is.
I've been in it longer than those guys. They don't respect me, but they should. And now they shall. No one will look me in the eyes. I will have rules. I will live in a celebrity space shuttle and hover around the universe.
All right, that's pretty great. I don't even know who he's talking about there, but I got.
He's talking about the guys on the show with him.
Oh, really? Well, you know,
he said, "Look, I'm billed fourth in the show behind a guy named Turtle." So
it's true.
He knows his place in that show.
And you know what? He is that show. He really is. Do you watch Entourage?
Yeah.
Good. You know, the great thing
I missed the finale last.
Oh man, dude. I'm not going to spoil it because Sarah hasn't seen it either. Neither is my wife. I saw it last night, though. This last three-episode arc on Entourage has been so great. But, you know, the thing about that show is, the irony is that, to me, the two guys that show really revolves around are Drama and Ari. That's the thing. It's like the other guy, not the other guys are unimportant, but those are the two guys that when they walk on the screen, you kind of perk up a little bit, because those are the scenes that are going to be the really great, funny scenes.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Something good happened though, right?
Yeah. You mean last night?
Yeah.
I will reveal nothing.
Okay.
I can't, no, because Sarah will, she'll kill me. She'll cut my head off. We're really anal about spoilers on this show and about not revealing anything. I will give nothing away, but I will say, here's the thing about Entourage. What's great about that show is the same thing that people bitch about, which is that it's 27 minutes long or whatever, and every time at the end of that 27, you're like, oh, but I want more! You're like, the show never seems long enough. There's no difference last night. Last night is no exception. At the end of last night's episode, you're like, but I gotta, oh, come on! You know, and you want more, and then you realize it's gonna be like 6 months, you know? So.
Oh, man.
I know, that's what I'm saying, brother. So it's a great, great episode, but get ready to just, just throw something at your television, because you're gonna want the next episode right now. So,
okay.
Just you be forewarned. All right, well, so there you go. And Farrah Fawcett was there looking embalmed, as she always does.
Yeah, she looks kind of odd, but Jacqueline Smith looks good.
I was looking at the paper this morning. She looked hot this morning. Anybody else exceptionally hot or ugly up close?
Exceptionally hot, Eva Longoria and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Jennifer Love Hewitt, of course. Jennifer Love Hewitt, I don't even know that she's hot so much as she's kind of this weird, cute sex pot kind of a thing. I don't know what. Do you ever see her sometimes, though, and Jennifer Love Hewitt, and her face looks all pointy?
Yeah, it's that nose.
It's the nose and then
the chin.
It's a very sharp chin.
Well, they could meet.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah.
Eva Longoria looks a little bony on television, though. You're saying she looks good in person?
Looks good in person.
All right.
Yeah.
Excellent.
She looks good in person.
Have you ever
seen? Because when you see her coming at you and she's not talking,
yeah.
There you go.
That's the spirit.
As soon as she opens her mouth, you go, nah, next.
That's what I'm saying. It's sort of the friend dresser syndrome.
You know, exactly.
Have you ever seen Nicole Richie in person?
Yes.
Really? When?
Ooh, what does she look like?
Look at Sarah just got all interested again.
I lost her behind a telephone pole the other day.
She fell into a subatomic space.
Do it, Tez, too.
So she's so emaciated looking in person?
I saw her a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, she looks pretty thin.
I mean, it really seems like any minute now she's just going to disintegrate into a pile of dust.
And I don't know if that whole, barely an IQ above room temperature thing is an act or not. I can't tell.
Well, it doesn't seem like she could have much sustenance going to her brain at this point. You know what I mean? It's like her little spindly stick legs need every little calorie that they can get.
The blood flow just to move her forward. It very well be. All the oxygen and blood flow is just to move her forward.
She's completely like one of those skeleton creatures at the beginning of the Terminator. You know, it's like in the future looking for John Connor.
Only because she has some lineage about her that she can't be, that void of intelligence.
You'd be surprised, my friend.
Maybe. I don't know.
All right. Okay. Well, there you go. Jim Roop, are you on this week? Are you off this week? What's your deal?
No, I'm not going anywhere.
All right, my friend. Well, I'm sure we will be talking to you in the very near future, especially because the word, according to Baumgartner, anyway, they're going to be shipping this freak back to you guys. So.
Well, I don't know that they'll do that. I can't see them shipping him back to L.A. In my opinion, he dropped the charges. What are you going to do with him?
People always get a second start in L.A.
We shouldn't pay for this crap.
spoken like a true Californian. I'm not going to pay for it.
I don't want him here, first of all. I got a daughter.
Yeah.
Secondly, who's paying for it?
I have no idea.
Let him collect pop bottles for a week and figure out a way to get home.
See, the great thing is, now you and Baumgartner are approaching the same sort of tenor about this. Screw him!
That's what I'm saying. I'm sick of the guy.
Give us
the rest. I knew he wasn't the guy when he confessed. I'm the first guy who said he didn't do it.
I know.
He just wants to get out of Thailand because he's in trouble there.
I know that we're like way over time with this thing, but the amazing thing is how... Look, I make like $5 a year, and I spotted it. The guy who runs the DA's office couldn't spot what we all immediately saw.
Yeah.
You know? Just, the guy at the 7-Eleven knew that he wasn't the guy.
He's not guilty.
Seriously. All right, Jim Roop, my friend, have a good afternoon. We will talk to you soon, brother.
Thank you very much.
All right, there you go. Jim Roop in Los Angeles. All right, we'll come back. Global Domination, David, be talking to us. We'll talk to him. I'm not sure what he's calling about. We'll find out. Peter Carlin from the Oregonian joining us after the break. We'll talk about the Emmys a little bit, Spike Lee's new documentary, and so forth. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on AM 970 Solid State Radio. We've got the USA Today wrap-up for Rockstar Supernova, where they say this is where we are now. The end is in sight. Recap, blah, 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 blah. Worst moment, Delana shocks the judges with her media interviews in which she badmouths other contestants. Best moment, Ryan performs an original composition to the delight of the audience, band, and Sarah Dillon. That's the most comfortable I've seen you on stage, Tommy Lee tells him. This week, watch for... Listen to this. After two so-so song choices, will Storm regain her stride? Also, Supernova picks another finalist to perform with them. They've picked... Who's performed with them so far? Toby and Delana?
Toby and Delana.
So there's... Who's left? Lucas, Magni, Storm, Ryan, Toby Delana.
And Delana. Yeah.
I don't see what that magnetic guy from Iceland is still doing there.
The Iceman. I dig him. I dig him. He's not right for the band.
No.
But I dig him. I guess
Delana cut his head open when she had her spaz attack.
With what?
After the show last week.
Oh, we can talk about that now because it's a webisode. Okay,
yeah.
No,
so Delana, after getting reamed last week, spazzed out, started breaking a bunch of crap. She broke a glass and threw it, and it hit Magni in the head.
Oh, man.
I mean,
he's probably not covered by insurance in this country.
And this week they still praise her, so there you go.
He's from Iceland. We're not gonna help him. By the way, the first Emmy Awards were presented in 1949 at the Hollywood Athletic Club. The name Emmy was a feminization, so says Wikipedia, of Emmy, a nickname used for the image orthicon tubes that were common in early television cameras. The very first Emmy Award, Tim Riley? That's right, Shirley Dinsdale. Ooh. All right, yes, ooh, thank you. It's 503-733.
I would have thought it was Bob first television broadcast, Hope.
By the way, you'll be happy to, Uncle Milty, you'll be happy to know, by the way, that the Emmy Awards trophies are manufactured by prisoners at the El Dorado Correctional Facility in El Dorado, Kansas. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll get Peter Carlin in like 10 seconds here. Let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show, David Heave, the Rick Emerson Global Domination Map. How are you, sir?
Hello, Rick.
Hey, I know you've been on hold for a while. I'm sorry about that. We were doing some crap. What's up, brother?
That's quite all right. I'm just calling and say hi. It's been a first time I've ever actually had the chance to make it in and call in.
Is that true? You've never actually called?
It is true. I have never actually called.
That's bizarre.
Up until this week, I've been working.
Is there some unpleasantness?
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
No.
We will see. In a contractual lapse, we will say.
Remember to get your children toys out of dumpsters.
You've met David.
Yes, I was taking notes.
And to get your vitamins from Bark. That's what Northwest Airlines was telling their employees last week.
And don't be afraid to dig stuff out of the garbage.
Yes, and chew your food 100 times on each side of your mouth.
And no one stays unemployed as long as we do.
Yes, and that's the thing is, know that your unemployment will not last as long as ours did.
Yes.
Oh, unemployment. Like I get that.
Well, you sound like you're on the edge of a mental collapse.
Have you already started drinking, Dave?
You know me so well.
This is just sad. What did you do for a living, David? I didn't even know.
I make maps for the man, I guess.
I see.
For a federal agency.
I see.
He works for the man.
So you are exactly the demographic that goes in shooting after you've gotten fired. You know that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, just, call us when it happens. Just give us the inside scoop.
I'll get you on the phone right as I have.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. The next time we see you at Dante's, the first round is on us, brother.
Thank you.
All right. You can check out his work at, you go to rickemerson.com, click down the global domination map, which is on the lower right-hand side. You'll see you've also done the Storm Large domination map.
Yes, exactly.
Did you say you were just in Cosmopolis? Is that what you're calling about?
Yeah, well, I was just, when I was calling up, you mentioned this in the show story. I had just gone camping in that area, and, we were driving by, I think it's Aberdeen right there.
And
Cosmopolis is right over there, and we pulled over, and we saw the sign for the Welcome to Cosmopolis. We had to pull over the side of the road, take pictures at the gateway to the city of the future.
The city of tomorrow? It's fantastic.
Yeah, excellent. It was great.
God bless you. You got to give us a copy of those, sir.
I will indeed.
All right, David. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll see you tomorrow at Dante's. We'll buy you some libations to soothe your anguish.
Hey, everybody, come on out. I know that sounds like Storm is going to need. Well, she never needs our help. But
we offer it though because we're all friends.
We have to.
Absolutely.
To go and vote as much as possible.
All right, man. Well, go lick her up.
I'm on it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Thank you. All right. There you go. That's depressing. I think that's David of the Global Domination Map fame. All right, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
Peter Carlin, TV critic from The Oregonian. How are you, sir?
Okay.
How's life? How are things? You just got back from vacation, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right, so thank you for joining us today. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
You don't sound like you're fine.
I forgot my lunch at home.
Oh, I'm sorry. That guy just got fired.
Yeah, I know.
So
stop complaining.
Yeah.
But I bet he ate lunch today.
A long lunch, sitting sadly looking out a window.
Yeah, I know. Nah, I know.
Wondering which of his many handguns to use to rob a store for food money.
It's
so
weird, but I can't figure out whether I forgot it or whether it vanished somewhere between home and here.
How would your lunch have vanished somewhere, do you suppose?
That's an excellent question. I haven't resolved it yet.
Okay. Good times. Hey, do you care about the Emmys at all?
Well, I had just watched them last night.
I was going to ask, is there any reason for us to talk about the Emmys? Is there anything having to do with the Emmys that you find interesting or feel like you really got to weigh in on?
Let me tell you what I've learned in the last 24 hours.
All right.
Okay, there were two people who sort of became punchlines in the story, my review, and one of them was Barry Manilow.
Yes.
The other was God, because there were God jokes.
Right.
Two people made God jokes, and they were funny, so I put them in the column, and I thought later, you know, God has a lot of friends on Earth, and they might get mad about this. So I was a little worried I was going to wake up this morning, and the God people were going to be extremely upset with me. I've gotten about, I don't know, two or three dozen extremely angry emails today.
Fantastic.
And the score so far, Barry Manilow 36, God 0.
Really? Is that true?
It's true. People who are into Barry Manilow from all across this great land of ours, I got them like from as far away as like Fort Lauderdale.
Now, I do have to tell you that I am a Barry Manilow. This sounds like a setup or some sort of irony or like I'm being a Hepcat or whatever, but I am a Barry Manilow fan. I am, but, you know, I got to tell you, I read your column this morning, and I have no fault with your comments on...
Well, the thing is, I mean, I didn't even talk about, like, how surgically enhanced the man is.
His bionic hips?
Well, no, it's not his hip I was worried about, or I was thinking about as much as his face. I generally think that 63-year-old men aren't quite as shiny and tight in the visage.
Totally, his big ball-like cheeks.
His big ball-like cheeks. It's true. It really is true.
Yeah, he's a very, very odd-looking man.
Well, he's one of those guys. I was talking about this earlier. Did you ever see one of those optical illusion pictures where you look at it and it's like it's a white candlestick, and then you look back later and it's two black silhouetted faces kissing?
Yeah,
that's what Manilow is in that. You look at him, and he looks unnaturally young, and then you look away for like 3 seconds, and you look back, and he looks really old. See also Kenny Rogers. See also Lonnie Anderson. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's strange. And I was also noting, I own and have read many times, multiple times anyway, Barry Manilow's autobiography. And why must you mock?
I didn't mock. I just laughed.
His autobiography is titled Sweet Life, Adventures on the Way to Paradise. And the great thing about it's fantastic. And the great thing about his autobiography is you can read it in like a day, probably three, like a one, like on a plane flight from here to L.A. You can probably finish the entire thing.
Mm.
And at no point in his autobiography does he mention when he was born, like the year. And not only does he not mention the year in which he was born, he gives no anecdotal or contextual evidence for it. Like, he doesn't mention any historical event that might allow you to pin down with any accuracy when he was born. So he can just shave years with impunity and no one can ever prove him wrong on it.
That's nice. And does he ever mention any romantic relationships he's ever had?
He mentions one.
Years?
He doesn't actually even mention a romantic relationship as such. He mentions this woman who is a little butch looking.
His secretary turned occasional consort.
That was a great sound you just made, by the way.
Speaking of sounds, what's happening with your upper respiratory system?
I got a little bit of a head cold today.
A little bit of a head cold?
Yeah, my nose is a little, and then I got kind of a wheezing sort of.
Your nose probably feels the way Barry Manilow's looks.
Probably.
You could touch it.
All right. I'm one of those kids that needs like a little, I need a little ventilator. What is it? Not a ventilator. The,
humidifier?
No, the inhaler. One of those little.
Some Vicks. You need someone to rub Vicks on your chest.
I need one.
Peter, you want to come? I'm not going to do it.
Thank you.
When did he even say that?
This?
You could touch it.
I don't know.
Sounds so naughty.
Well, what's sad is I lost the bitches ain't nothing but hoes and tricks. That was lost in the great firing from Entercom. I don't know where that went.
That probably accounts for the great firing from Entercom.
Probably.
Yeah, they wouldn't let us do the penis watch.
No.
Weasels.
They wouldn't even let the puppetry, the penis guys do their thing. No, but the thing about, and so Manilow, in his autobiography, Sweet Life, Adventures on the Way to Paradise, he mentions at one point that he lived in L.A. kind of around the I Write the Songs era with this woman who I think her name was Linda, but I may be wrong about that. And she's very, very sort of butch looking, and they lived, and I don't believe he ever mentions that they dated. I think he just mentioned that they were very close and that he had a dachshund named Bagel. Also that in his front yard, he had a fountain that you could turn on, and it would shoot out streams of water phallically with appropriate colored lights and music. And he would sometimes go out there and dance around while the phallic water shot out of the...
Did he use the word phallic?
He did not, but I know exactly... But he described it, and it seems like a whole lot of...
Whenever I look at Barry Manilow, I always feel like I'm looking at a guy who spends a lot of his day screaming at people.
I could absolutely see that. In fact, I have seen Manilow, let's see, I've seen him in concert 3 times, and I've seen, hold on 1 moment.
Excuse me, what was that? Roll that back.
I've seen him in concert 3 times.
How'd that happen?
I bought a ticket.
3 tickets?
You are an odd young man.
I'm not an... Thank you for saying I was a young man. I went the first time. I won't bore everybody with the whole long drawn up story, but the first time was as a joke. I worked at a radio station, and there was one of the morning guys there was quite legitimately a Barry Manilow fan, and it would sort of become a running joke. And so as a gag, Barry was playing the Gorge. This is, I don't know, probably 15 years ago. And as a gag, we gave away this whole exotic, all the frills trip to go see. It was like a limo to the Gorge, and you got to go to some great restaurant, and there was front row seats, and then the limo back home, and you got to get the autograph. And it was sort of as a gag, because it was a rock station. It was like, oh, we're giving you the, you know, this huge trip to see Barry Manilow. And it was all a riff on the fact that one of the morning guys was a Manilow fan. And so I went along as part of the, you know, just, I wanted to, you know, to go just to be ironic and funny and whatever. I'll totally admit that. But you know what? That guy put on an amazing show. He really, from a pure sort of Tin Pan Alley, very carefully constructed from an artisan point of view as opposed to an artist. The sense of a guy who sat down and really scripted out how to have a great performance and an entertainment, a spectacle. He did a really great job.
See, but here's my problem with him. I mean, I understand what you mean as a showman and all that kind of stuff. But when he opens his mouth, I don't believe a word he's saying.
Oh, no, not at all. No, he's, yeah. It's complete, as I said, it's complete contrivance.
Yeah.
Here's the classic Barry Manilow moment for me. And he's, I've seen him twice more, and I probably won't see him again because it's, it is pretty much the same thing literally every time you see him. Same rap, same story, same whatever, same jokes, same timing, same inflection on the jokes. But here's the classic moment from the show, which is sums up what is great and terrible about Barry Manilow, which is the sort of climactic song before the encore is, of course, Mandy. That's sort of the big song that he finishes with, and then he goes off and he comes back with Copacabana or whatever. But he is getting ready to play Mandy, and you don't quite recognize it yet. He's just sort of noodling, as they say, on the piano.
Is he tinkering?
He is. He's just sort of sketching on the piano, and he does this whole, you know, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but he says, you know, I've been all around this world, you know, and I've played in a lot of places. And I've done all kinds of shows. And the whole time he's doing this, dun, 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 you know, the sort of piano tinkering.
Yeah.
And he says, and the last part, though, is word for word, because I remember he's done it 3 times. Every time I've seen him, he's done it. He says, I play a lot of songs, some hits, some just songs that I really love. And I've played this song, well, probably more than all the others. But I'll tell you, I never get tired of playing this song because this is the song that brought us together. And then he starts doing that dun 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 dun, and I'm like, yeah, because I recognize that it's fake, and I recognize that it's contrived, but I got to tell you, I can respect and admire a guy who can really just work a crowd like that, and who can really, there is something, some Malcolm McLaren part of me. The same part of me that will watch, like, the Trinity Broadcasting Network and just be really impressed with those guys, that they are just so oily and shameless and perfect, and the machinations are just so well greased, you know? And I don't even remember where the hell the story started.
It started with your infatuation with Barry Manilow.
But there is a part of me that does admire this. This is the same reason I love Paul Stanley from Kiss, because it's just so big and fake and dumb but it's just so beautiful in a horrible way. And but Manilow, but you're right, though. He does have that screaming, bitchy queen, like, right underneath the surface. And I have seen him in concert really... very, with a really, like, smooth, brittle politeness. Ream, the sound guy.
Oh, sure.
The light guy. And then I saw him do this live by request thing on PBS, where it was like a fundraising thing, and where he was in a studio at PBS, and he sang for an hour, and the deal is you would dial an 800 number, and he would answer the phone, and he would say, "Hello, Barry Manilow," and it'd be like, "Hello, this is Janice in Omaha."
Right.
And he would talk, and then Janice would say, could you play Weekend in New England?" And whatever. And the thing is, as he would talk to these people on the phone, you could just see with every fiber of his being, he just hated the people. He hated the audience. He hated this woman. He hated everything about the fact that he had to do this for a living. But, you know, that he did it because it's what pays the bills.
Well... so. Yeah. I also, you always get the sense that he's one of these guys who, like, his contract writer for personal appearances includes all these things about how you can't look him in the eye when you see him backstage.
And he calls you by a number.
Yeah.
You, 7, get me Evian.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
All of this is true. When we come, I gotta take a break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the Spike Lee documentary.
Boy. Here's my problem. I need to review this show. It's been staring at me from my TV screen.
Is it the Aaron Sorkin program that you're going to be dropping off for me?
No, but I did find that DVD for you, by the way.
You're going to be hooking a brother up?
Oh, yeah.
So are you saying you have to go?
I am saying that.
All right.
Spike,
you can't hold on for like 5 minutes, no. Peter?
Peter doesn't care.
Peter can't just sit around and listen to ads on the radio 10 minutes while you've got work to do.
Well, can we call Peter back after the ads are finished playing?
Peter might be out trying to buy a salad.
You're not to look Peter in the eye.
Peter, yeah, Mr. Carl.
Number 3, why are you talking?
Yeah, I was going to say, you can just call us by number...
Don't speak to me like that!
Don't speak. You went all Diane Weist on me there for a minute. No, don't speak. Don't speak. Let me ask you this then.
Okay.
Then I'll just ask you this before we break. I have not watched the second half of the Spike Lee documentary, which is called When the Levees Broke.
Yeah.
Or When the Levee Broke, which is a 4-hour documentary. I watched the first half, and I got to tell you, it is, you are right in that it's a little over long, but goddamn, there are moments of that where it is, you just feel just that huge, and what's what I call the Schindler's List rage, just the huge, righteous, indignant, yet furious but sort of impotent anger.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so well done. And it's a pity that more people will not see it because it has the word Spike Lee on it.
Well, yeah. No, it's really got some powerful moments. My favorite part is when the mayor, Ray Nagin, is talking about when the army finally does show up, and that one, the general, the black John Wayne dude, who shows up and starts cussing, and suddenly things get done.
Sure.
That was kind of a nice moment.
It's there, I mean, and there are moments there that, again, as sometimes with, whether it's Michael Moore, whether it's whoever, moments where you feel like you're being shown things that, to use this dreaded phrase, the mainstream media doesn't show you.
Yeah.
You do get the feeling that even as horrible as it was, that we saw a very sanitized version. You know, for example, when Soledad O'Brien tells that story about doing a stand-up for CNN on Tuesday, dead body in the corner, and then she comes back like 3 days later, same dead body, in a major American city.
Yeah.
With a military that supposedly can be anywhere within 36 hours to solve a problem.
Right. No, the most horrifying thing was the people from the Jefferson Parish, the sheriffs who stood with guns on the bridge to keep...
And wouldn't let them out.
Wouldn't let them out of the city.
Yeah. And it's just, you do get that as I said, that very, that righteous, you know, but again, sort of frustrated because it is a little impotent, that anger about the you know, not in my America kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right, well... I know you've got better places to be and so forth, so it's okay. It's all right. I tell you what, we will. I know we tried to get you a little early today and it didn't really work out, but we'll make sure you do it next week. Because next week I will give you my thoughts on your book, Catch a Wave: The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson.
Sweet.
And I know I know the New York Times doesn't. You know, that's. I know you've been waiting for my reaction.
I'm totally.
It's really what it's all about.
Beatles, man.
Yes, okay.
Go get your salad, Peter.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
All right, Peter. Thank you so much. Later. All right, there you go. Peter Carlin.
I love it when he started referring to himself in the third person.
Seriously. Peter Carlin's got to get some lunch.
Well, he is a famous author now. Peter's hungry.
I was... Peter needs food badly. I was trying to work in a some sort of a Mandela thing at the end. You know, like a Peter, Peter, you're the best audience I've ever had. No, I got nothing. Nothing! Ah, all right. What's that look for?
So weird. I don't know. I feel like I've been up for way too long. Like, I've been in the studio for like 6 hours. It feels wrong.
Sarah Dillon needs to go home. All right,
Sarah
ladies
Dillon
and gentlemen. It's so true. We're going
to
need more of that if this is going to be a four-hour show every day. Stay there. Back after this, here's David Allan Coe. Breaking news. It's not my fault. Did he really say that on his blog?
I'm looking right now.
Fantastic. Oh, here we go. Barry Manilow. Barry Allen Pincus. Doesn't a Pincus sound like a name you would call somebody? Don't be a Pincus. Andy Dick. All right. All right. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of Rick Emerson's radio program. Rick Emerson's going to pick up the phone now. And I'm just going to start doing that constantly. Where did I... I don't seem to have the... wait, hold on.
I've got a terrible cocaine habit.
No. It's here somewhere. There we go.
A postman is a person in your neighborhood.
Welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Mailman Chris, our official stenographer. How are you, sir?
Oh, it's hot.
Y'all worn out?
I am. It's karma. I made light of how much extra time I had on Friday, and today is just, I'm slammed.
It's a busy day. What with the delivering?
It's a busy day with the delivery, and you know.
I don't want to disrespect you or your job, because I know that it's a crucial and often difficult job. But what defines a busy day from a not busy day? Is it literally just the number of things you have to deliver?
Yeah. Well, the houses, the number of stops is static. It's going to be the same every time. But the volume of the mail, you know, I might have, you know, an extra 3,000 or extra 2,000 pieces of mail today.
Really?
That I didn't have yesterday.
That is crazy.
You know,
do you guys just dread it when something like a new Harry Potter book comes out?
No, because that's actually the cool thing to deliver, because those people are waiting at the... Or I remember delivering those.
Yeah, but it's like 1,000 pounds of stuff you got to carry. I mean, it's...
That's not so bad, though, because literally the little kids are running alongside you waiting to their house so that you can hand it to them. Christmas time is cool, too. No, it's the catalogs. And the coupons. The coupons that go out to every house on, like, every other Tuesday, those are bad.
Rick Emerson doesn't like catalogs. All right.
It's good to know that extra hour helped you out today, Rick.
Look, sons of bitches. It's not my fault. It is John Mark Carr's fault. There was breaking news that took over the program.
You got the Clyde Lewis, you got the Jim Roop, you got Stormwatch, you also got the bonus Peter Carlin. Unfortunately,
bonus.
You did not get the double corpse watch, you did not get the Arizona news, and you did not get to the top five.
God damn it. How is that possible? That's not four, it's three.
No, double corpse watch.
That's one thing. It's a single item.
It's a corpse watch.
All right.
So it's a single, but that puts you back to 49, so you lost the 3 years. You gained back the three you lost on Friday.
Great. Thank you, sir.
No problem. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right, there you go. We want to thank Peter Carlin, Jim Roop, Gary Baumgarten, Bob Costantini, Clyde Lewis, etc. Rick Emerson Show returns tomorrow at 11 a.m. And don't you forget, Stephanie Miller, 6 to 10, and then we follow Jim Cramer at 11. As always, don't let the bastards grind you down. Insert all the rest of the credits here. Like us up in about 35 seconds, kids. Be safe. Thanks for listening. See y'all tomorrow. Bye.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.